The following podcast is a production of the Washington College of Law at American University. Any unauthorized use or distribution is strictly prohibited.
Microphone from here. Is this audible? Can you hear us?
Can you hear us well enough?
We're okay?
Okay. Higher. We're trying to podcast this part of the program for your colleagues who couldn't join us this morning. So if you can't hear us in the back, just raise your hand and we'll try to speak a little bit more loudly. As I mentioned, Matthew Pascasello is going to help with this portion of the workshop. We gave you a break because we know this is probably not going to be the most exciting part of this program today, but it is a very, very important part of your job search in terms of resumes and cover letters, so we hope that you'll pay attention. It's going to be about an hour session, and then we'll have a break and move into some other panel discussions. Your resume is a marketing tool, and you'll see in your professional development workbook that there is a section on resumes and cover letters that will provide basic information that's found on page 67. The workshop materials in terms of what we're doing today is actually found on page 100. We'd like you to raise particular questions at the end so we can try to get through the information, but we will have a break between the resume portion and the cover letter portion. And I'd like to just poll the audience quickly. How many of you have at least 1 year of work experience in between your undergrad and grad?
Good.
Great. How many of you have 2 or more years? Wow, fantastic. Okay, good. How many of you went to your undergraduate career office to get help with your resume when you were undergrad? Okay. How many of you used a macro to create your resume? Very good. Wonderful.
This might be a shorter presentation than we thought.
Exactly. No, you all seem like you're totally ahead of the game, which is great. How many of you have reviewed or edited your resume in the past 6 months? Fantastic. How many of you have WCL on your resume? Okay, good. All right, so the purpose of your resume, which many of you probably know, it just puts your experience into perspective. As Ms. Hodges mentioned, it really helps an employer to look at it for 20 seconds and get a sense for what are your interests, what is your experience, how can you be of value, and how can you be an asset to that particular employer. If an employer is only reviewing the information for 20 seconds, you need certain things to pop on your resume. And we sort of refer to that as sort of keywords or words that an employer is sort of looking for when they're looking through a particular resume. And it's also a marketing piece. In addition to just having your information on a page, this is, in some cases, the first piece of information that an employer will receive about you, and whether you like it or not, there'll be people competing for positions with you. So again, having an effective resume is incredibly important. How do you use your resume? Yes, of course you're going to send your resume when it's requested for job postings, but what about informational interviews? What about when you have a chance encounter with someone in a hallway, or if you have a chance encounter with someone here? A resume in those particular instances may not be the best way to present your information. And that, again, brings in skills of networking and building relationships, not just handing them a piece of paper and saying, hi, I'm John Smith, I'm a 1L at WCL, but instead building the foundation for a relationship and then either giving a business card, which some of you may have already. I know our student services office in the past has an avenue for you all to get business cards as law students at WCL. So giving a business card may be more appropriate, or at least following up later with your information if requested would be appropriate. So you're not always going to use your resume when you first meet someone. Yes, for job applications, but probably not for more informational interviews and chance encounters with certain individuals. So again, how can our office help you with resumes? One of the reasons we don't do what we call resume drops is that we feel it's very important for us to understand what is your experience, what do you want to do. If we simply said, just bring your resume to WCL, in 2 days somebody will mark it up and they'll give it back to you, that's not really helpful to you. That's doing you a disservice because we haven't been able to probe and ask, you know, this position that you had before you came to law school, how is that position relevant to what you want to do now? And if it is relevant, do we have all the transferable skills from that position on your resume so that an employer can see that there's a trend and there's value in terms of what you can bring to them? So our office does not conduct what we call resume drops. Instead, we will meet with you on a one-on-one basis to really talk about your resume, to talk about your goals, to talk about your experiences, to make sure that version one of your resume helps employer A and version three of your resume helps employer C, because you may have 5, 6, 7 different versions of your resume before you actually graduate. So again, the importance of it being reviewed, we're not here just to look at typos, we're not here just to look at formatting, which of course we do. We really want to get to the meat of the content of your resume and how that information is presented. Since you're here today, obviously after this session, you can feel free to schedule an individual counseling appointment with any of our counselors to go into that information in more detail. But it really is important to us, and it seems like a lot of you have reviewed your resume in the past 6 months. Please take your resume out and review it before you send it to us. Because again, if we spend half of the session talking about have WC on your resume, make sure that your information is in reverse cron, it's not going to be the most effective and maximum way to utilize the time that we have together. Any questions about that just before we go on? That was just a quick intro. Okay, so I'm going to turn it over to Matthew, who will start talking about just the mechanics of more of a legal resume, and then we'll look at a couple of examples.
Okay, great. Thanks, Tracy. And again, because we have a broad array of experiences here, but a lot of you, gratefully, have experience before, professional experience before coming to law school, you're going to have a little bit more to work with, and that's the good news. But for those of you who perhaps went right from undergrad to law school with no professional experience in the middle, it doesn't mean that you have nothing to put on there. That is to say, if you've done internships, externships, if you've done volunteer work, don't think of the resume as being some kind of chronology, reverse chronological recitation of merely paid-for jobs. To the contrary, the resume, as Tracy indicated, is a marketing document. And to the extent that you have experiences, to the extent that you have transferable real-world life experiences, volunteer experiences, paid or non-paid, these can be very compelling nuggets to offer a prospective employer, specifically if those experiences, as you write them in your section, relate directly to the roles and responsibilities you're going to be assuming at the potential position. Some broad strokes before we get into the nitty-gritty. Very important in terms of professionalism, but very important also in terms of whether or not I'm going to bother offering you an interview, is your resume as a writing sample. It needs to be stated because year after year, from American University to Harvard University to Bolt Hall University Schools of Law, you see resumes that have typographical errors in them. You see resumes that are sloppy presentations and boring, dry job descriptions as opposed to what they're supposed to be. Professionally written, yes, I will say professionally written because we are professionals now. We're in a professional school. You're going into a very serious profession. So these have to be professionally written, compelling marketing documents that show not only your abilities to do the work, but also serve to show that, hey, I know how to write, I know how to write well. Hey, I respect my audience. I'm going to give you the respect of writing a professional document and presenting it to you because that's how I want you to perceive me, my background, and how I'm going, the kind of work ethic I have. So there are all these, before you even get to what to put into the resume, there are all these agenda items that you have to understand an employer is looking at before she even puts her eyes into the meat of the experiential section. Having said that, let's take a look of really what needs to be on the resume. Only relevant information, or I should say, try to at least put whatever information you have in the most relevant terms vis-a-vis that employer. And we'll see in some of the samples that, well, Matthew, for God's sakes, I worked at Tower Records. How relevant is that to Arnold and Porter? Well, of course, it's not going to be directly on point, but there are experiences that you may have had in particular positions where there are very fine transferable skills that can be offered. And, of course, legal employers are not expecting you as first-year students, as second-year students, to come walking up with resume in hand, having had the exact substantive experience that they're looking for. That's not what they're looking for. They're looking to see, is this a promising individual? Is this an individual with good problem-solving skills? Is this an individual with superior analytical skills? They'll be looking a bit at the GPA for sure to make these assessments, but they'll be looking much further beyond that too. They're going to be looking, is this a person with strong oral and written communication skills? This is what they're hiring out there. I don't care if it's legal aid or the Horgan and Hartson's antitrust division. They all want the same set of skills. Research skills. Well, we're all doing legal rhetoric, research and writing, but to the extent that you're performing exceptionally well, you're being awarded in it, et cetera, to the extent that you published a thesis, to the extent that you've done some kind of substantive undergraduate writing or graduate school writing, to the extent that you've written an article that was published, these are all wonderful demonstrations of your research and writing abilities. That's what they're buying out there, folks. At this point, they're not buying your understanding of the facts in Paul's graph. They understand that you're learning tort law, you're learning contract law. They're not hiring you for your substantive legal skills yet. They're hiring you for your maturity, professionalism, again, the problem-solving, analytical skills, and the like. So how are you going to demonstrate this? Well, in a resume, typically striving for a one-page document, although it's a bit of an artificial boundary, but to the extent that you can produce a one-page document, usually preferable, and there are definitely exceptions, especially within the public interest sector, where a two-page resume is absolutely fine. A one-page document should suffice, and again, on a one-on-one basis, we can determine whether or not, in your case, it should be one page or two pages. At the end of this day, you should not be walking out of here saying, well, they said this, and therefore, I'm stuck in this box. No. This is macro advice with some punctuated individual examples. But as it pertains to each of you individually, there might be exceptions. You need to come in, have a counseling session, and understand how these dynamics relate specifically to your profile and to your targets. Okay, trying to match those two. The first thing you're going to start off with is education, with some very few exceptions. Unless you're going to law school as sort of a corollary to a desired profession that you want to get into, say you want to get into international health and you have maybe a master's in public health and you thought that a law degree will fortify it in a certain way, but you don't want to practice law per se, maybe under that circumstance your experience section will precede the education section, but even then it's doubtful. For the most part, you're going to lead with your educational section. And in reverse chronological order, because that's what's most relevant to the legal employer. Hey, what law school are you going to? How are you doing in it? Your first year, that's about as much as I can assess, unless there's some real good substance down here, and I'll look at that too. So in reverse chronological order, American University, Washington College of Law is usually the way people put it out, or the American University, Washington College of Law. And typically, a bold-faced format with respect to putting the educational institutions there. For visual diversity, let's make this document pop not only through language, but also through visibility. I want to see this thing. I don't want to be bored by these big blocks of text. I need some distinguishing factors such that sometimes less is more, huh? You don't have to put every single thing you've done. You don't have to be too laborious in your descriptions, and we'll get to that in a moment. So the educational section, law school, graduate school if it pertains, second, and then again in reverse undergraduate, reverse chronological order, your undergraduate school, perhaps with sub-issues being studying abroad. Some people choose to, and it might be very nice to have just the law school, the undergraduate school, and maybe if you spent a year abroad, maybe that academic institution, that can be fine too. And under each respective institution, you want to put the related honors, awards, activities, thesis, or anything else that you've drafted. Certainly leadership activities. What's the point here? Again, not to create this dry tombstone of past accomplishments, but to create a living, proactive, dynamic document that shows that you have leadership abilities and you've had successes. We want to see what your successes were, because they're going to be indicative of the success that you're going to bring to our organization. That's the point here. Not just showing us, wow, look at me, look how great I was. But look what I've done, look what I do, and look at the accomplishments I've garnered. That's how you're going to move into the experience section. In reverse chronological order, again, typically for most of you, although for some of you, again, it might be, especially for perhaps evening students, and again, those who have law as maybe a secondary career consideration, you might have alternative careers or consulting careers in mind. With some exception, there might be a hybrid document, which is a reverse chronological, but within each employer, you might have then subsections relating to the subject matter itself, so that you would have, say, healthcare experience, and maybe having a few employers under there, research and writing experience, and a few experiences under there. For most of you, that will not be the case. For most of you, it will be a reverse chronological layout of employers, and then with good experience sections underneath. Good being information, again, that is written in such a way that quantifies wherever possible through numbers, number of clients met, number of cases handled, a number of customers served, unlike McDonald's, billions and billions, huh? Dollar signs, responsible for this number of dollars in an annual budget, responsible for creating this kind of saving the company X numbers of dollars per year. Again, these are objective, not subjective. I did really well on this job. No, that's subjective. I want objective, demonstrable evidence of your propensity to excel in my environment. And this is the way you do it. Unpaid, paid, that's not the point. Remuneration is not the issue. Description is the key. Think career highlights. So you can talk a bit about your responsibilities, but we would prefer to see you put in either bullet point or a narrative format, whichever works best, for you, and you, everyone has a different style, put in these career highlights that are almost sort of little success stories that you want to talk about. And again, they're going to be successful to the extent that they show that you've brought value. What's your value proposition to this organization? This is what I've done in the past. This is the kind of value. These are the results I've brought to this organization. And that's indicative of the kind of work ethic I have, the kind of success I have, and the kind of success I'll bring if you hire me. That's really the MO here. So through the experience section, you then have a typical format. And again, we're just referring to page 100 here, the employer's name, and basically a format that we'll look at in a second in the resumes that are appended, as well as additional sections to the extent that they pertain to you in publications, language skills, personal interests in travel, if unique and extensive, special skills, licenses or affiliations, leadership and community service. Again, on a case-by-case basis, these might be wholly appropriate or inappropriate for your resume, depending on what you have and what you're trying to promote. And then there's issues to discuss with respect to the resume, whether include your GPA, is there a bright line, if it's above a 3.2, leave it on, below a 3.2, leave it off. You didn't hear that. That's not the bright line. And no, 10 of you will walk out of here. Well, the guy said, you know, that guy up there with the bald head, he said something about 3.2. And no, it depends on what you're trying to promote, and it depends on who is reading this, okay? But these are issues to discuss, whether to include political affiliations, Greek memberships or other affiliations, religious, sexual orientation. Again, where this information is going to make a difference, where it should be, when it should be included, when perhaps it should not. All of these are your decisions. We can counsel you, though, through them. Whether it's this private high school, use of local or permanent address, I'll just finish off with that. To the extent that you have a local or a long-distance job search, how many of you folks here are considering the fact that you want to work next summer and perhaps permanently in your home state, which might not be in the D.C. metropolitan area? You want to go back to California or Illinois, et cetera? So not a few of you. So the long-distance job search is going to be an issue for you, and there are ways to deal with your resume effectively that way, perhaps starting with a permanent and a local address as just the beginning of the process. All right. How much time longer should we spend on this?
Maybe another 10 to 12 minutes.
Okay, good. So in the next 10 to 12 minutes, we're going to go through these three resumes, not for the purpose of picking each single one apart, but just by someone blurt out a comment. When you see this first resume here, Russell Moore, on page 101, what's an instant reaction? Is this a good typesetting? Is this a good font? No. Who wants to offer a specific critique? Raise your hand.
We have a roving mic, so if you raise your hand, we're not calling on you, but if you'd like to volunteer, we'd be happy.
Can I choose a victim?
No. If someone has a hand, is anyone just willing to give us a critique of the first resume?
There's lots wrong with this.
One or two things?
Okay, good. We have some hands.
First off, they have an unprofessional email address.
Uh-huh. How about, keep going, you're on a roll.
Secondly, the font type is a little bit unreadable and professional, and
Actually, Nexus is it. Where do we have LexisNexis? I didn't see that.
At the bottom, I think. LexisNexis.
Yeah. I think that's how you spell that, the LexisNexis.
The car.
Yeah.
Car,
how about if I wanted to call you, Russell, assuming you're Russell? Do I have a phone number to reach you at?
No, you don't, and you probably don't.
Right. You've been wonderful, and you've earned yourself a Starbucks gift certificate.
Thank you.
Now everyone's going to start raising their hand. But sort of pushing through this, because it is such a poor example, your colleague has really demonstrated some of the just ABC issues going on here. Avenue, abbreviated, huh? No phone number. Unreliable, of course, is a ridiculous name, but the point there is to underscore that you don't want to have an unprofessional-looking email address. Moving to the educational section, there's no diversity, there's no, in terms of boldface, the eyes just sort of glaze over this clump of text. You know, boldface the institution. There's an inconsistency in the use of periods in between DC. Choose a postal code and stick with it throughout. Be consistent. The Juris Doctorate versus a BA is a Juris Doctor. You don't need to spell that out. People typically put JD or BA, or if you're going to spell it out, be consistent. Again, we're talking about consistency, not that one form is completely superior to the other. Incorrect punctuation, business law society, semicolon, moot court. The BA, business/marketing, is that a double major? Is that a major minor? Is that a single major? To the extent that you have majors and minors, to the extent that you have double majors, indicate that. Activities, honors, I don't have a perspective for what the Luke Dillon Scholarship Award is. Maybe it's a $10 scholarship. Maybe it's a full tuition scholarship. So to the extent that there are activities, honors, awards out there that might be germane to your institution, but that are noteworthy, you might want to include a parenthetical that talks of that. You might want to include a parenthetical that speaks to the fact that you worked 20 to 50 hours per week to finance your undergraduate degree. So there are lots of different supporting information that you could put in here. The format is terrible here. The assistant manager, Metro Video, everything's it's not centered properly. If anything, you can sort of borrow from the last exhibit. Again, none of these are flawless. None of these are flawless. They're all flawed. And we have, I'm from Brooklyn, I have trouble with certain pronunciations. And we do have better examples in the office for you to look at, and I think they're online as well, correct, Tracy?
Yeah,
the American University. Okay, so pushing forward into the meat of this, the experience section is horrific. Poor sentence structures, too shallow. And as a reader, I am just not going to assume the best of this. I don't have time. I got 80 resumes in response to the job posting I put out. You've made it very easy for me to throw your resume in the garbage. That's what they're looking for first blush. What's the easiest way to ding this resume? Don't make it easy for them. Okay, so just a few final words on this one because there's so much to say, but I think you get the point. Computer skills, not necessary. Everyone's assumed to have basic computer skills. Unless you have C++ programming or some other specific computer skill set that is really germane to your interest in doing intellectual property law or patent law dealing with software issues, et cetera. Otherwise, they're just sort of assumed. Similarly, references and writing samples upon request, no need for that. Again, it's assumed that you will provide them. So Russell, on his own, he went to Career Day for 1Ls. He picked up a few tips, and he decided let's go back to the drawing board and implement those comments, and he did a pretty decent job. He came up with this new version, although when he comes into the Office of Career and Professional Development, we're going to take it further and edit it because he certainly still has some goof-ups here, but it's a much better version of what we've seen. And you have some formatting issues, but you can see right now the setup is a little bit easier to access, the information, et cetera. Still some remaining flaws. Again, there's some offset issues and directivities. He's got the first year moot court competition indented there. We still don't know if business marketing is a double degree. But he's put in his activities, business club, vice president, social club, Zappa, 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 social chair. These are leadership positions. Leadership positions are good. They're strong to demonstrate. And to the extent that you did something as vice president of the business club, for instance, you were able to have Bill Gates come in as a guest speaker or something notable like that, it doesn't have to be Bill Gates. But to the extent that you accomplish something or put on a program that's notable, I would indicate that too. Again, the Metro Video, Towers Records, and Emporium Department Store aren't going to be germane to Arnold and Porter, But this explanation at least shows me that we have some management experiences, that he took on new employee orientation. There's leadership there. There's customer service orientation and focus there. At the Emporium Department Sales Store, he developed an extensive repeat client base. That's excellent. That means his judgment was well perceived by high-end clients, and they kept going back to them. You don't think that's relevant to a legal services business, which is otherwise known as the practice of law? Of course it is. How much more time do you have?
5 more minutes.
Okay. Other things that sort of pop for anyone from this resume, from the transfer of the resume, anything sort of stick out? Sir? What he did between 2004 and 2005. That's good. How about gaps on the resume? Are they an absolute no-no? Not necessarily. But to the extent that you can diffuse them, that you can put, you can account for that space, absolutely. Perhaps he was traveling during that period. Perhaps he was, and I've seen this actually work successfully with two alumni. Actually, they were students at the time I've counseled. They were fishermen up in Alaska. Like, I should put that on my resume? I was like, of course you should. In certain circumstances, going for judicial clerkship. And it's a very interesting dynamic. And it shows your perseverance. It shows you're not adverse to risk. It shows you know how to fish. But again, these are sort of transferable life experiences that make you an interesting candidate, an interesting person. We're hiring a person. We're not hiring a widget. We're hiring someone who's going to fit within our organization. And Alaska fisherman is sort of interesting if everything else is in place, too. Give that man a Starbucks gift certificate, please. Thanks for those comments. Going on to the last version, a different individual. It's the best of the three. Again, it's not the best out there, but it's better. But still need a conversation with the counselor, Ms. Rhodes, here, to go over, to flush out certain things. But format-wise, it's okay. I mean, things seem to be pretty well-structured. I prefer the structure of boldface in terms of the employer itself with the city and state afterwards, and then the dates flushed right from there. And then underneath that, in italics perhaps, your position title. I think that's good. And she's indicated some, again, very transferable experience. Developed marketing strategies, shows your business savvy, shows the fact that you can relate to the law as a business, which may or may not be relevant. If you're going to be working for a direct legal service provider, that might not be as important to them, but for a private firm, a small firm in downtown Bethesda, it might be very important for them, who's very interested in your business acumen, your ability to speak with and actually generate business, and your potential to do that. Her management, managed low-income housing unit, oversaw the entire building operation for 2 months. Again, leadership, managerial experiences, multitasking. These are all transferable life experiences that make you a strong candidate. And operational budget work at the University of Delaware. She worked on a judicial program, okay, so has some obvious interest in and potential for mediating disputes and issues. So she's sensitive of probably workplace dynamics and balance. Again, we are interested in the whole person, the whole candidate, and these are good things for us to know. And then she's created this carve-out volunteer activities section, which is quite good here as well. We want to sort of move on quickly to the cover letter section, but we want to stop and ask any questions at this point, comments with respect to these documents or the heck with these as they pertain to your life experience and your resume questions. And they're popping up. I saw this woman's hand first, and then that gentleman there. Please, up front on table four.
And we'll repeat the question for the iPod.
Sure.
I was wondering.
Sorry,
I was wondering when you would start taking off things that you did freshman year of college.
So the question is, when do you start taking off experiences from freshman year of college? I think really, again, it sort of goes back to what are you interested in doing? Are those things relevant to what it is that you want to do? If you had 5 internships in college and that now pushes you to the second page and the 3 on the last page are not relevant to what you want to do, then you might want to rethink whether or not it's something that you want on your resume. If you've come straight through from undergrad to law school and you really just have those experiences and some of those skills I venture to say are probably transferable, then you probably still want some of that on your resume. And that's why we always say that a resume is really a living document. You won't just have one version now that will last you throughout the 3 years or 4 years that you're here. You'll definitely have different versions. So as you get more legal experience, which is obviously what a legal employer is interested in, those internships will probably become less important. And again, it really does depend on what you did in those internships and how those relate to what you want to do in your legal career.
Sir.
I was wondering what to do in the work experience if you were promoted within the employer so that you don't list, I worked here, manager, when you weren't a manager for the entire time.
Excellent question, and a lot of us face those issues.
And the question again is, what do you do if you were basically promoted within a position during the time that you worked for a particular employer?
And oftentimes the quick fix to that is putting in the employer's name, and then underneath that, in italics, the way you see here in Susan Rhodes, program administrator / acting interim director, you would put the date flush right to that, and underneath that, assistant program administrator, and then the date flush right from that, so that we'll see the progression. And then perhaps it might be good in a bullet point to say, promoted in only 6 months, so that the employer recognizes that, hey, this is a fast promotion, or promoted over several other more senior people. Sure, brag about yourself. Put it in context. You absolutely should, but do so professionally.
And the other part to that, too, is to the extent that you had different job responsibilities, you may need to break that up. Mm-hmm. So you would start with the most recent position first and have the header, as Matthew explained, have the blurb, but then under that maybe have your initial position, and if those experiences were different, you can do that. So you can do it a couple of different ways.
Do we have time for one more resume question
before
we move on?
Yes.
You have a person there.
Should you include interest on your resume as well?
The question is, should you include interest on your resume?
How many people say yes? Wow. Everyone else say no?
Does it depend on the interest that you're listing, maybe? Yeah.
Precisely. And it's not that some interests are better than others, but interests, reading, hiking, jogging, okay. But perhaps, you're a marathon runner instead and you enjoy Shakespearean sonnets. Well, that's a little bit more interesting than just reading and running. So with respect to interests, it can be very appropriate to put it on there. And depending on what they are, it might just otherwise serve to be somewhat bland, but okay, or maybe just decide in that case to take it off. But where there are accomplishments in those interests, and or there's some kind of hobby or skill or success that you want to really promote, again, it shows the bigger picture of who you are, that you're not just the work that you've done. You have this whole outside life as well that's important to you and which you do well in, if that helps.
We can take, there is one more question.
Okay.
I just wanted to know, when you're tailoring resumes for a particular employer, how do you balance, reading out experiences so that you don't have gaps?
So the question is, how do you, when you're targeting certain employers, how do you deal with your experience so that you don't have certain gaps? I mean, again, as Matthew mentioned, the gap issue is a pretty big issue. So if for some reason you have a gap, you need to be able to explain that gap when you're questioned about it. Taking out experience just for the sake of space may not be the best strategy, because again, if you're creating gaps where really none exist, then that could be another problem as well. So I think, again, it depends on how relevant is the experience that you're taking out. Why are you taking it out? Is there a way to perhaps have that experience on your resume, but maybe not in a full-blown description? So maybe you have a section that deals with other relevant experience, and you're able to briefly note other positions you have that may be of interest. So again, getting into that, it really depends on your strategy, the type of employer that you're targeting, and how those experiences may or may not be relevant to that employer. Does that answer your question? Did you have anything else?
Yeah. I think that's great. And again, bottom line is, on an individual basis, your results may differ. the advice might differ dramatically, but these are some pretty fundamental, broad-based comments and strategies that will pertain to probably all of you. So from that, perhaps let's segue into the
cover letters. If you're using cover letters,
what are cover letters?
What are cover letters? Cover letters are actually used to put your experience into perspective, and these truly are marketing pieces. So the one disservice you can do to yourself is to take your resume and basically regurgitate your resume in a cover letter. That is not the purpose of a cover letter. You want the employer to see two different things. The cover letter will highlight the experiences that are most important for that particular position, and they will draw on experiences that are noted in your resume. So the one thing you do not want to do is just take the paragraph that you have in your resume and just simply write them in a cover letter. I know these days people apply for positions online. Typically speaking, if you're mailing a cover letter and a resume, you do want to make sure that you have matching stationery, that you have a matching envelope, and that it looks professional. However, if you're applying online, you still need to be professional, but it may be a little bit different. So, for example, we would suggest, if you're applying to a position online, that you actually attach a resume and actually attach a cover letter. Why would you do that? Because you want to make sure that the formatting doesn't get upset when it goes through email. If you just simply have your resume or your cover letter in the text of the email, sometimes there can be problems with the formatting of that. And again, this is your presentation, sometimes your first entree to an employer. So we always say that it's better to probably just have an attachment for both your cover letter and your resume. The cover letter, unlike the resume, really should be one page. While your resume, you have some leeway in terms of whether or not it should be a page or two, depending on your experience, depending on the type of employer. Your cover letter really should be a one-page document. And employers usually expect that it will be a one-page document. So what is the information we're putting on the cover letter? Obviously, your contact information, your phone number, your email address, how these employers will be able to reach you, your name. We want to make sure, if at all possible, that we have an actual contact person. It's better to call into an employer, if they're accepting phone calls for a position, to get a name of a contact person. Number one, it gives you a targeted cover letter that you can create. And number two, to the extent that you need to follow up, which many people do need to follow up on their application materials, it gives you a point person to whom you can direct any additional inquiries. So if at all possible, please get a name of an appropriate person to whom the letter should be addressed. You also want to make sure that you spell the person's name and the firm or the organization correctly. Again, this seems pretty basic, but it's your first impression for a lot of these employers. And if you can't even spell their name or can't even spell their organization name, that's going to give them the license to say, well, you know what? I have 200 other people who can spell our name correctly. Why should I even consider this person? So again, attention to detail, and I know you all are learning that now. All of that information you're learning now certainly carries over to your professional documents. You'll want to have a salutation, dear Mr. or Ms., dear Judge X. Very important to have that. And another thing that we can sort of talk about later, but remember that a lot of people to whom you're sending cover letters will be attorneys, and it's not necessary to have Mr. John Smith Esquire. If a person is an attorney, it's simply John Smith Esquire. You only need to use their Mr. or Ms. if the person is not an attorney, or perhaps if you just can't discern whether or not that particular person is an attorney. So please don't use both. It's either one or the other. For your opening paragraph, or what we call the positioning statement, you need to be concise, but you need to explain a couple of things. They want to know, are you qualified for this position? So if they're looking for 1Ls, you do at some point in that letter need to say that I'm a 1L at WCL. But do you necessarily need to say, I am a first-year student at WCL? That's the example that we've given here, and certainly that is something that I see all the time. But I don't know, if this is your dream job for the summer, maybe there's another way to open that letter that really shows your interest in that particular position, and then later on in that paragraph you could sort of give the background in terms of the type of student you are. Certainly, referencing the position is important, but also, why are you interested in this position? It's really not enough to say to an employer, I'm interested in applying for this position and I'm a 1L student at WCL. There has to be something there that grabs the reader's attention. Now, when I say that, that doesn't mean that you all should run out and say something really crazy in the first paragraph, because that can also turn an employer off. So again, there's a fine line in terms of how much enthusiasm are you showing, how much interest do you have in that particular position. And again, your relevance to the position. And we do have down here, exercise professional creativity in using all or some of these elements to express your uniqueness and to motivate the reader to read your enclosed resume. And that's what we're doing with the cover letter. We want that reader to look at your cover letter, even if it's just for 30 seconds, to say, you know what, really interesting, they seem to have experience, they seem to have interest, they seem to know what we do, let's take a closer look at the resume. So you're trying to compel that reader to take action on your resume. The second part of the letter, and again, I've seen cover letters that are 3 paragraphs, I've seen cover letters that are 4 paragraphs. Again, it may depend on the employer and the level of experience that you're bringing to bear in the cover letter, but that the second 2 or 3 paragraphs really need to get to the heart of the matter. And we'll address this shortly, but it really needs to connect for the employer what that employer is seeking and how your experience and how your interests match what that employer is seeking. So what I like to see at the end of the cover letter is once I read a cover letter, I want that particular student to address any of the elements in that job posting, make sure there's a connection between the elements in the job posting, make sure that I'm not trying to draw inferences from just generalities in a cover letter so that I am compelled to take action. And I'll tell you right now, it's not the easiest thing to do. It's difficult to craft cover letters because you really have to give them thought. And I think a lot of students really want to do sort of the mass mailing, let me just interchange the employer name and just send it out. Those are not effective cover letters. You really need to make sure that you think about what does this reader need to know about you in conjunction with what they've said is important for this particular position. Again, here you can note things such as your grades. I mean, if it's a research and writing proposition, instead of saying I have strong research and writing skills, you can note that you received the highest grade in legal rhetoric or something to that effect. You want to talk about certainly the foundational skills that they're looking for, but if you don't feel that you have the foundational skills, do you have the interest? Is there something in your background that would still compel that reader to take action on your cover letter? And again, as Matthew said about the resume, this is a writing sample. Any typos, any misspellings, anything that's bland, again, will be held against you. It is a writing sample, so please treat it as such. And then after those 1 or 2 paragraphs, you'll have a closing paragraph. And I think, again, the inclination here is to just say, well, thank you for your time. Here's my resume and the other information you looked for. I look forward to hearing from you. Well, would it maybe be better to be a little more proactive and say, you know, I'll be in New York over Christmas break and would love to meet with you at your convenience, or I'm happy to follow up with you in the next week or so just to make sure you receive my application materials. I mean, at this point, it might be better to be a little more proactive to show that you really have an interest in the position as opposed to just saying, okay, well, here's my information and I'll just wait to hear from you. But the one thing I would say is if you're going to put your foot out there and be proactive, you have to do it. So if you tell them you're going to follow up, please make sure you do so, because if you don't do that, that could also leave a poor impression as well. And I know we're sort of whizzing through this, but certainly we'll have an opportunity to talk a little bit more about it. Are there any just general questions about just the anatomy of a cover letter and just the content generally that needs to be in the cover letter? Yes, ma'am.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, it's a good question. The question is, what should you put in the body of an email if you're attaching the cover letter and the resume? Typically, that can be something very short. You know, I am attaching a resume and a cover letter in response to the particular job posting or as a follow-up to our conversation. And I think it can be a pretty short sort of to-the-point thing, and then referring them to your resume and your cover letter that are attached.
Absolutely, in the reference line as well. Other questions that sort of pop from here, or your real-life experiences with resumes, with the cover letters? Okay. We're not tied to the format in here, so I'm just going to highlight a few of the interesting notes on page 105. As Tracy well articulated, the purpose of a cover letter certainly to serve as a writing sample and to demonstrate your relevant capabilities. Compelling the reader to take the appropriate action, appropriate being inviting you in for an informational interview, inviting you in for an interview for this position specifically. But like writing a legal memo or client letter and any kind of legal document, there are some upfront startup costs to drafting a cover letter, and those are the things people usually try to avoid. That is the research, the painstaking research that precedes writing an effective cover letter. And consider it issue spotting, the way you would in an exam or for your memo. That is to say, before you can write something, you have to understand what the employer's hot buttons are, what this job description is laying out as the fundamental issues that need to be addressed, and be proactive in engaging those issues. Be responsive to the job announcement. Don't say, oh, one size fits all, cover letter, I'm just going to give you an enclosed, please find. It's not a wrapping paper for a resume. A cover letter is a writing sample, and it has to be responsive. So, I'll just throw out, so in terms of uncovering this relevant information, well, what do you want to tie it to? I have a couple of examples here. A mutual contact at a firm could be a perfect piece of relevant information where your cover letter would say, Professor So-and-so, dear Mr. Smith, Professor So-and-so suggested I contact you to discuss your work in international trade law. That is the golden opening line of a cover letter. You have a mutual contact that told you to contact her. That's who you start with. Don't bury it anywhere up. Don't bury it anywhere in the letter. Put it up front. How about an article or law review piece that they've written or relevance to them? Dear Mr. Smith, I recently read an article on your organization's exemplary work in the field of human rights law. My background as an intern for Amnesty International during college gave me significant experience in human rights issues, including blah, blah, blah. How about school affiliation? Dear Ms. Smith, as a fellow alumnus of the University of Miami, I'm writing to ask you about opportunities at your firm for a first-year law student. So the alumni affiliation might be a nugget to a piece of relevant information. How about recent cases they've been involved in? Your recent representation of Mrs. Paulsgraf intrigued me, as I am interested in pursuing a career as a personal injury attorney. Relevant experience. With over 3 years experience selling financial services products, I have a fundamental understanding of securities law and significant experience dealing with sophisticated clients. What I'm trying to show you here is that none of these are necessarily law-related experiences that you have, but you all can probably find something of relevance to that targeted employer that you can tie in, okay? Areas of practice, size of firm, or some other examples. And there are lots of resources. The Office of Career and Professional Development has a wonderful resources library, both physically and online. You need to come in and understand all of the research documents. I do the alumni counseling. I can't tell you how many times that I work with sophisticated attorneys who have, you know, been responsible for their careers and have used the services, but there are a lot of resources for them that they don't even know are available to them. And here you are in the school with relative ease. You could come in and find out, oh, my God, I was looking for a position in the federal government. Look at all these other resources. I was looking for judicial clerkship. Look at all these other resources. I was looking for small, mid-sized firms. And there you are trying to reinvent the wheel when we have a couple of different wheels for you to try on in the office, okay? So it's going to be a lot like your legal research. You need to do it. You need to find the hard info, the soft info. That's the info that isn't published out there necessarily, and that's what alumni are particularly great for. The alumni mentor database is online, and we can talk to you about proper use of that. But in a nutshell, these are alumni who have said that, yes, I will be happy to speak with WCL students and or alumni in discussing their job search strategies. Network. Help them network. Types of cover letters, certainly to submit in response to a job, but very much also for a personal letter of introduction to request an informational interview, as a targeted letter to a specific organization that perhaps doesn't have a job description, but you know that you're interested in that organization, you want to propose your services as perhaps an intern or an extern this summer. And then the mass mailings. How many here have done mass mailings before? All right. And of that group, how many have been successful? Absolutely. That's statistically right. I mean, in terms of mass mailings, we hate them. They're garbage. Garbage out, garbage back. Having said that, we would be lying if we said that people who have done that haven't gotten response. Of course you can. But that's a waste of time. It's a waste of money. It's a waste of expectations. Stay away from just mail merging lazy person's job search by just mail merging firms, sending out the same letter, one size fits all, and seeing what sticks. Again, it would be disingenuous to say that that doesn't every now and then result in success, but the stats are against you. Instead, you want to do a focused, targeted campaign, and there can be a lot of layover between interaction between one cover letter and another. It's not that every single cover letter needs to be, you know, brought up from the beginning. There's lots of transferable pieces of information you could take from one to another. What time do we want to finish up?
We should finish up. 5 minutes.
Okay. Let's just take a quick look at the examples there, but sort of in the abbreviated version, maybe we did the resumes, maybe?
Yes. On the next page, starting on page 107, you have a job announcement, and then you basically have three examples of letters that are written in response to the job announcement. If you want to just take a quick read on the job announcement, and then maybe what we'll do, because the first letter is probably the one that has the most issues with it, we will see if we can dissect some of those problems. So just take about 30 seconds or so to read over the job announcement.
Page 107, job announcement. Should we get to it, do you think?
I think so. Are you all pretty much done skimming the job announcement? Okay.
Speed reading.
Yeah. So this is the first place you're going to start. Just because you see a job announcement, one of the things that I like to do with job announcements is literally, and I've done it in my book here, I basically go through and I circle all of the relevant core skills that employer is seeking. And then once you do that, what you need to do is draw a parallel between what is that employer looking for and what are the skills or experiences I have to offer the employer in those areas. Because, again, at the end of this cover letter, we want the employer to say, aha, perfect candidate. This person matches all of our criteria. So a couple of things. The name of the organization, it's a nonprofit. One of the first things I would say is to go on the Internet and research this organization and figure out what are they doing. What is this organization doing, and how does that tie to what you want to do? They talk about being and working for the District of Columbia. Is that a place that you have ties to? Of course, you're at WCL. Is it a place where you'd like to be next summer? Then yes, that might be something you might want to note. They ask about sort of the position requirements and what the law students will be doing. One thing is it's a part-time clerk position. So to the extent that's something that draws you, certainly that's something you could be mentioning in your cover letter. Legal research, factual investigation. Assistance interviewing and screening clients. Those are the types of things that if you've had relevant skills or you've done something like that in the past that you'd want to bring to bear for this particular employer. In terms of the successful candidates piece, which is under the position requirements, they would like people, you're going to be working with people with disabilities. And so they'd like someone who has a demonstrated knowledge in that area. It can be coursework, it can be experience, it can be volunteer. But basically, they're looking for someone that's interested in that area and can bring their legal skills to that area. And then lastly, they give you the information on how to apply and the person to whom the cover letter should be drafted. So I don't know if anyone would like to take, if you look at that first cover letter, given that information, if you see any things that we might want to talk about in terms of the cover letter and how it's drafted given the position or the job description description.
Who wants to tear that first cover letter apart, that Mark Palasco cover letter?
We know it's terrible, but why is it terrible?
Give us all you got, sir.
Well, first off, it's addressed to Mr. Sonny Dubois, and then the information is that it's Sonny Ken Dubois, Esquire.
Exactly.
And so that just seems to be a vehicle to talk.
How do you like the fact that the first paragraph also, every sentence basically begins with I, me. This is a very typical and improper approach of being egocentric, that is writing to the employer to say, oh, this is what I want. It's all about me. This is what I'm going to get from this. To the contrary, you want to answer the question, what's in it for me being the employer? What's in it for you if I were to come here? Excellent. Please give that man a Starbucks gift certificate. Should we just sort of push through the rest of this ourselves?
So, yeah. So the eyes, too, I mean, certainly very distracting. You may not feel that they're distracting when you're writing the sentences, but if you were to read this letter out loud, which I really would encourage all of you to do, when you draft a cover letter, take 2 or 3 minutes and read it out loud and see how it sounds, because the employer is looking at it for the first time, whereas you may be looking at it for the 10th time. So sometimes you have to take a step back and just read it. There is a lot of sort of legalese in here. I am writing pursuant to the job announcement. And there is another...
In closing herewith.
I mean, you are in law school, and that's important to note, but you certainly don't have to start transforming the way that you're approaching employers because of that. So be mindful of that. A couple of general statements here. You know, I enjoy legal research. I always like helping people. I mean, you've got to put those things into context. One of the things, again, that I see a lot is I have strong research and writing experience. Well, I bet everybody in this room has strong research and writing experience, but how do you demonstrate that? You want an employer to see, oh, well, an A in legal rhetoric, or I worked for this professor in undergrad and the article was published, or you want to give examples of your skills. That's the most crucial thing. Again, you don't want to just put something on your cover letter, in your cover letter that's on your resume, so that third paragraph, as for my academic performance, blah, 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 blah. Well, I'm sure all of that is just sitting right on the resume. Now, obviously, if you need to highlight that experience, you certainly should do that in the cover letter, but obviously do not just regurgitate what is on your resume. I think affected is not used correctly in the second paragraph, how the disability affected their daily lives. It should be an A. Again, grammatical issues can certainly bring to bear on an employer as well if you're not using words properly.
And I would just say the next two samples are progressively better, with the third one, Claudia Simpson, being the best. Again, not the best that could have been written, but just the best of these three examples. And but there again still remain some issues, because we want to print this up in a few minutes. We've included the final two pages, actual cover letters that were given to us by employers, one from, unfortunately, a WCL student, and one from a Georgetown University School of Law, a Georgetown University Law Center student. We couldn't make this stuff up, folks. This stuff is really, really bad. And but let it be known that this is what's out there, and they're incredible. So rather than spend a whole lot of time going through those, again, want to answer any questions that you have, and also underscore that we are happy to work with you on your cover letters. We are happy to work with you through this process, but we expect you to come to the table having given it your all at first blush. Please don't come to us with something that's half written, something that's not yet done. Sure, we understand draft versions, but we can't write these things for you. This is your work product. Ethically, we cannot rewrite your cover letters or resume. We can comment on them. We can go through with you. We can edit for you. We are not going to rewrite your cover letters. We are not going to rewrite your resumes. Understand that. It's an ethical issue as much as your personal and professional development, okay? So you have to understand that. But we are here to work with you tirelessly so that you're putting together the best candidacy possible.
Okay? Thank you. Thank you, Matthew. Thank you for being attentive for the past hour. Robin in the back is going to give you some details for the panel discussion, so if you could just listen up, and then we'll have a 10-minute transition period in order for you all to get to the panel discussions. Thank you.
In the interest of time, because we do have a 10-minute break schedule,